The upcoming primary election on May 8th features a number of congressional and county races getting attention, as well as a controversial amendment about marriage. But voters may find themselves befuddled by a few races further down the ballot. Judges, for example. Judicial elections are nonpartisan, which means voters can't pick the easy way out and vote straight Democrat or Republican. But judicial candidates are also limited in what they can say about how they would rule in cases, so that makes it hard for voters to choose. For a better understanding of how this process works, WFAE's Julie Rose is here with me in studio. Julie, we'll talk about the specific races on the May 8th ballot in just a moment, but first, on the broader issue of electing judges, is there any good way to pick a judge?
Well, I can tell you that states do it differently. About half use a hybrid system where judges are chosen by a commission, and then every few years, voters get to decide whether to keep that judge on the bench or get somebody new. And then in a handful of states, judges are chosen by the governor or legislature. That's how South Carolina does it. The rest, including North Carolina, elect judges by popular vote. Now, the advantage of having judges elected by the people is there's less of a chance the bench will be stacked with cronies of politicians who are doing the nominating. But the election process also leaves, as you can imagine, some inherent room for corruption. There's a project called the State Integrity Investigation that recently took a look at how prone states are to corruption based on the laws and safeguards they have in place. In the area of judicial accountability and transparency, North Carolina got a D+. And that's tied partly to the fact that judges here have to campaign for office. Mecklenburg County Chief District Court Judge Lisa Bell laid the process out for me.
In a county, a jurisdiction this large, they are not inexpensive. And most of the contributors are going to be either friends and family members of the candidate, or they're going to be members of the bar. And that can at least take on an appearance of impropriety.
Now, I notice she says the appearance of impropriety there.
Right. She points out that the most a person can give to a judicial candidate is $1,000 in North Carolina. Campaigns in our district court region here usually raise between $10,000 and $60,000. The vast majority of those contributions are $100 or less. I have had attorneys tell me they worry sometimes when they go before a judge they didn't contribute to, and they know the opposing lawyer did contribute to that judge. But most of the time, I hear comments like this.
It never crosses my mind. The judges in North Carolina have a remarkable degree of integrity, and I've never felt that a judge really gave any consideration at all to, you know, campaign contributions.
That's Mark Merritt, a litigator here in Charlotte and former president of the Mecklenburg County Bar.
So he's confident in the integrity of North Carolina's judges, but are there any safeguards to guarantee a bad egg, so to speak, isn't being influenced by campaign donors?
The state does have disclosure laws. Judges have to report the broad details of their assets, their investments, business deals. There's also a judicial code of conduct, and there's a judicial standards commission that enforces the code. But it has some limitations, for example, on conflicts of interest. The code says a judge should recuse himself from a case if one of the parties asks for it. The judicial code doesn't require a judge to volunteer the conflict of interest otherwise, though.
So it's not much of a safeguard then?
Not technically, but the director of the North Carolina Judicial Standards Commission, his name is Paul Ross, he says there's just not much of a problem with conflicts of interest on the bench. The code of conduct may have some loopholes in the language, but Ross says it's really more of a minimum guideline, and he urges judges to err on the side of caution.
I get a lot of calls from judges saying, you know, should I disqualify from this particular case? You know, here's what the potential basis would be. What do you advise? We tell them yes.
So last year, the Judicial Standards Commission got 282 complaints against judges. Ross says the vast majority of those were people who were unhappy with how the judge ruled in their case. Most of the complaints got dismissed. That's typically the case. Just a handful ever go beyond the initial complaint stage to actually be investigated and then end up in some sort of reprimand. The public actually never gets to see the complaints that are filed. They're confidential. And the commission's reprimands are also confidential for the most part.
But there are instances of misconduct on the bench. We've had a few high-profile cases in Mecklenburg County in the last few years, judges resigning and being censured.
You're right. And there's actually an example of that right now in the upcoming primary. See, most judges up for re-election typically run unopposed, or they just have one challenger. However, when a judge gets into trouble, they tend to draw a larger field of opponents. And that's the case with Mecklenburg County Judge John Totten. He was briefly suspended in 2010 for making offensive comments to his associates. And now the Judicial Standards Commission has recommended that Judge Totten be censured for willful misconduct in the handling of a DWI case. So he has three challengers, and the May 8th primary will whittle that race down to two. The other judicial race on the primary ballot has five attorneys vying for the seat of a judge who is retiring.
Since judicial candidates can't say much about how they'll rule on various cases, is there at least some sort of evaluation that tells people how well a judge performs on the bench?
Well, there hasn't been until now. This year, the North Carolina Bar Association, which is a volunteer group, has for the first time put out a report card of sitting judges up for re-election. So they surveyed thousands of attorneys across the state, and they asked them to rate judges on things like their integrity, impartiality, legal ability. The Bar Association says it's also working on a similar rating for attorneys who are running against sitting judges. Those ratings aren't ready yet. You'll find, though, it's not easy to get information in most cases. In truth, judicial races end up being a lot more about name recognition than anything. And then we're back to the whole thing about having to raise money to get your name on the billboards and on the ads.
Is there any movement in the state toward making the judicial selection and governance process more transparent or accountable?
There's always talk of changing the selection process, but North Carolina's been electing its judges for more than a century. There has been a change recently, though, that is interesting to note in how vacancies of the state's highest courts are filled. So when a judicial seat comes open in the middle of a term, and this happens a lot when a judge suddenly retires or gets appointed to a higher court position, say, then in those cases, it's the governor's job to pick a replacement. Well, the potential for political influence or favors is obvious in that case. So by executive order, Governor Bev Perdue has created a judicial nominating commission to vet candidates for vacancies in the state's higher courts. And that's just beginning its work.
Very interesting, Julie. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.